Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm 1970s Elvis Fat Cell, filling in for Kyle Swagger this week. How you doing? Welcome to the show. This isn't working, is it?
No, don't do that. Just start. Put down the accent and step away.
I don't want to put down the accent. I'm quite enjoying the accent.
You should do the Mickey like you were going to.
No.
Anyway.
Anyway, let's just do the show. This is take three already, and I can't do it anymore. Welcome to Bagel Tech Photo this week, ladies and gentlemen. It will get better, I promise. Chris Forsman's out this week, though. We don't know where he went. Some jungle somewhere. Hopefully he will return. We do have Alex G. Fox with us, though, this week. He's back with us. Audio problems solved. Check, check, check. Can we hear you, Alex?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Can you hear me?
We got you.
Yeah, can't hear you. Yeah,
oh, we'll make the most of it because it won't last.
How's your week been?
Yeah,
it's other than today. Don't count today.
Yeah, today's been a write-off, but the rest of the week's been fine. Thank you very much.
Doing a little work, doing a little photo taking, doing a little developing.
Yeah, I've actually done some of all of that.
Really?
Yeah, a bit of that and a bit of this. Mainly film.
Ooh, your imported film from New York City.
The only thing I've developed in 10 years is a cold.
Are you sick today?
No, I'm fine. I'm healthy and good and raring to go.
Are you sure? Because you sound like you want a bitch.
No, I'm good. I'm actually all right. I've had a crap week. I still got no car. Sod all has worked on the video machine in the last 24 hours, but I've still made showtime.
And you need a haircut.
No, I don't. I'm growing it. While I've got it.
Are you getting in touch with your inner 60s hippie in you?
No, my hair's coming out from my head. That's it. I'm working against God, who's trying to take it and push it out my nose and ears, but I'm not having it.
Yeah, he got me years ago.
Yeah. Alex is my ballast.
The week in photography news, it is and what it shall be, and we shall go through with it. First, guys, that we're going to talk about is probably the biggest news of the week, and that's the leaked photos of the Fujifilm upcoming supposedly interchangeable lens mirrorless camera. We've talked about this on the show before, but it looks to be coming out very, very soon. Nice looking camera. First thing I'm going to ask you about this, though, is this a film camera?
No.
And why the hell did they stop using Fujifilm then? Just call it Fuji.
Okay. It's just a brand name, isn't it? It's
I don't care.
Brand loyalty or whatever.
No, they called it looks
Fuji. Go ahead, Alex. Hey. Sorry, you had something sensible to say.
I was going
to
say, they called it Fujifilm because Fuji don't just make cameras.
Yeah, but they don't make film anymore.
Yeah, but it was when film was worth having. And now it's not.
They do make film still. They still make film?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
People still use film, mate.
Funny enough, I don't know if I mean, think about that. There is some developing shops here, but I don't think anywhere, and this is Manila, mind you, I don't think I can buy a roll of film anywhere here.
Probably can't even buy an envelope in Manila.
Well, I mean, your production costs and post-production costs of film have gone through the roof. That's the trouble. So the demand isn't there, so the volume's not present. The volume's not present. The prices go up for purchase of film, and then for developing it, most of the places that you used to take it to develop, if you didn't do it yourself, are gone anyway. I mean, I think, you know, I used to take mine up to Colin Alford Photo Laboratories in Birmingham, and they haven't seen me in 10 years. So I don't think they're still there. I remember I used to walk in there. There used to be a floor-to-ceiling refrigerator with Kodak emblazoned all over it, and the thing was absolutely racked full of film. And the last time I was in there, it was literally 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and the same fridge was there, and there was about 5 rolls of film in the thing.
Funny thing is, though, I think I'm talking out my behind, but I'm sure there's plenty of places to buy film here. I just don't go into these places anymore, and I don't think a lot of people do. Anyways, I'm getting completely off subject. We need to talk about this camera, talk about what the wow factor is and why we need leaked photos of it.
I think they're going for this idea of the Apple-esque release of product, and it's just a case of someone seeing it. There's a bit of hype around it because of people wanting it, and it's been leaked out, but There's a lot of nice stuff with this. I mean, I like the fact they've gone for the external controls on it. The ISO banding there on the top is really, really good. The f-stop requirement, you know, that kind of stuff. It's not all software-based anymore. There's a lot of buttons on the outside to quickly select what it is that you want and change your viewing modes and that kind of stuff. It does look very, very nice. The only thing I think that's going to be the problem with this is that it's going to come out and it's going to be priced too high. There seems to be this desire to flesh out $1,000 cameras that aren't worth $1,000 and just make them look old so that they get that respectability with them, if you like, that puts that extra couple of $100 on that the people believe that they want. And then also, you know, everyone's going, oh, tsunami, so we've got the extra price from that. And I just don't think it warrants it.
What's funny about this, though, and I'm going to direct this towards Alex, because we talk about it on the show all the time. You said there's a lot of buttons, there's a lot of features, press it, you got it. But Alex, we hear constantly from you guys that it's not always the best way to go to press a button and voila, there's your lovely effect.
No, I mean, what I think they've done here, and I think it's interesting because the way you took it in the first place, they've taken cameras back to a point where they do resemble film cameras. And the reason being with that, with a film camera, to some extent, you needed to know what you were doing. It wasn't just a point and shoot and you will get a perfect picture, which, you know, with a lot of digital cameras, that's the idea. And what they seem to be doing is saying, you've got point and shoot rubbish on your phone. So let's not make point and shoot rubbish now. Let's make something where you've got all the abilities to do exactly what you did with a film camera. It's just you won't capture it on film, you're capturing it on a sensor. So it's no wonder you got confused and said, well, is this thing a film camera? And I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, we use the word, oh, well, look, it's a professional point and shoot. Well, it's only because of these days we deem anything where you can actually do anything more on point and shoot as a professional camera, which it shouldn't be. That should be the standard for a camera. Point and shoot technology should be if you're not interested in any way, shape or form. So I find it quite interesting that you assume that this had film.
I think the thing with this camera is the fact that what's nice about the current compact range is they're embracing more manual use of the cameras. So, you know, before, if you looked at the G9, for example, there was manual in there, but to try and hunt through and get the settings and that kind of stuff, there was usually a bit of interface with the operating system. And I think what's nice about the new camera and this retro, this one in the chat room called it, you know, funky retro seems to be the current trend. What's nice about that is that all the old cameras, the Rolleis, those kind of things that these things are mimicking, had external camera controls on them. And those external controls are coming back for manual shooting. And that's a very positive thing, I think, for the prosumer and also the amateur who wants to gravitate and learn more about manual photography. It's not a big thing to carry around, but it gives you that option.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, ahead, except for one quick thing. You say that, you know, the old things had manual. I don't think they really did. They had a way of jumping into the auto, if you like. It wasn't so much a manual setting. It was I can break into the automatic settings and slightly make it do what I want. This, I believe, is an actual manually organized camera with an auto alternative, and I love the idea of the way it's moving.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's old Rolle, I'll see if I can get it down and share it on the show next week, but my dad's old Rolle's got these dials all over the top of it, and if you wanted to go into a manual mode, as you're saying there, it was extremely easy, whereas if you look at the Canon G9 here, you can go into a manual mode with it, but then you can do certain amounts on the manual mode with all of this stuff, but then at some point you've got to start opening up the OS and making ISO changes in the OS rather than making the changes physically on the top. And that's the difference. These things seem to be a lot more now about going back to the way it was in the 60s and 70s when points and shoots were kind of just breaking out from DSLRs. And they are going back for this manual control element on top, which means that people can get what they want far more quickly and easily.
Retro feel, but updated technology.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that's a tip of the nod to the 70s. I think they actually got control camera design pretty well done. I mean, ergonomically, it was very good. You look at the pictures of the cameras that we've got now with this retro funky look, unquote, the chat room, and actually, the layout of a camera hasn't changed much in the last 40 years, 50 years. Because ergonomically, they hit the sweet spot.
I want to ask you about this because I think the two things are, I don't know if they're actually linked or not. I think they're the same story. Does this thing have an organic sensor? And first off, what the hell is an organic sensor? And why do I care if it's organic or synthetic?
Good question.
I'm not sure about what they think an organic sensor is. I mean, it's if you talk about the word organic, you know, maybe it's made out of lettuce leaves. But
well, exactly.
I don't get what that means. It's got organic sensor, but I'm just trying to quickly pick up on the story that I got from it.
It doesn't actually explain it in the story.
It's not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an organic photoelectric conversion layer, something. But that still doesn't explain it. It's. I think it's bull for we can charge more.
Orgasmic may sell a few more cameras, though.
Yeah, it's got a large absorbent coefficient. In principle, it can absorb enough light in spite of its extreme thinness. Therefore, it's free from spectral crosstalk between tiny pixels when capturing slanting rays of light and does not need any micro lens conventionally used for gathering incidental light.
Hmm. So you're saying it's basically pesticides-free.
It's magic.
No arsenic in the glass. There you go. That's it.
It's a magic box.
It's bull. There we go.
Okay. It's to sell the camera.
It's $400. That's what it means.
An extra $400 because we don't know what this thing's going to cost.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what do we see a release date on this? Because I was looking at February next year, 2012.
Yeah, 2012. One of the other things that's quite interesting is the fact that it actually links with Leica lenses. So if you've got a Leica camera with interchangeable front lens, your Leica lens is going to fit this, which is nice.
Are you more likely to have a Leica and being able to afford Fujifilm lenses, though?
I mean, really? quite. If you've got a Leica with an interchangeable lens, why you'd want to put it on this, I don't know. But
yeah,
try putting it on your Leica, that may help.
Yeah.
Guys, I want to move on to another story now, being the fact that this thing isn't going to be released till 2012, and there's no reason to talk about it for the Christmas market. It's actually one that I added to the stories just as we were talking here. Nikon has launched the IPPJ transfer app for iOS, I guess for their Cool Pix series. This app is, in a sense, I guess, is to get to take your photos off, put them on your iPhone or I guess your iPad.
I love the way that we're just about starting the show. He adds a story and then asks us what we want to think about it.
Yeah, that's right. You're the pros.
We haven't read it.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's awesome. Brilliant.
No, I think what it basically is, it's something Nikon have written. They've realized that they can't win the battle against iPhones and iPads, but what they can do is they can sort of use some of the functionality that the iPhone, or maybe really the role that matters in the iPad has, and people are still want to buy a Nikon to use with an iPad, because at the moment, I mean, not so much the pad, but with the phone, people wouldn't think, well, I'm going to use a camera and the phone. So this is sort of their way of bridging the two things, and it makes these, it gives it a feeling of compatibility. Not that there wasn't a compatibility, but you really needed to go through, say, a Mac or a PC to get it from one to the other. But this way is a jump, and so they've found their allegiance and have thought, we can't beat these people, let's use their technology but make it, you know, a bridgeable technology rather than having to go through a third party.
Well, there is something. Go ahead, Ewan, go ahead.
This is AirPlay.
Exactly, this was about to say, this is AirPlay, and you can take your photos, from what I'm reading here, you can take your photos that are already on your phone and use the built-in, we were talking about the Pico projector and what we could use it for or not use it for. I'm taking it. You can get your photos that are already on your iPhone and display them also up on the built-in projector via AirPlay, correct?
Well, that's what it is. Your application runs on your iPhone. It samples your photos library, and then using that, you can send over AirPlay to the Coolpix, and the Coolpix projector will project what your camera is sending it. But if you go back 6 months ago, I said to you, the problem is that cameras in smartphones are encroaching on compact cameras, and what the compact camera has got to do is integrate with the internet, have Wi-Fi enabled, direct file transfer to computers, that kind of thing has got to come into it if it wants to stay alive and if it wants to compete. And I've got to say, clap of hands, Nikon have looked at that statement that I made and have acted on it. They have gone to the point, I'm not saying they've listened to me, but what I'm saying is they've embraced technology and they've made the camera do something else. And that's the key part. The camera industry will only survive if it starts to do what cell phones are doing it, but do it with higher quality images and do it better. And that's Wi-Fi integration, Wi-Fi compatibility so that they can send images directly from the camera straight back to laptops and that kind of thing. Then I think, yes, they've got a real good chance of competing and staying alive.
Aren't you thinking you wish Canon would listen to you, though?
Canon are struggling a bit at the minute. I mean, I was talking to someone on Twitter today and they were saying about problems that they've got with getting the EOS system to work online. And in my opinion, humble as it may be, Canon's digital software interaction with all computing, whether it's PC or Mac, is broken. And their customer services for that is possibly the worst in the world. And the simple things like if you want to update the firmware on your Canon camera, unless you've got the original discs, you can't do it. Now, if you say, I haven't got the original discs, they're willing to sell you back the original discs for an extortionate fee, or tough, you can't get the firmware update. And if you look at things like iFi and so on, you've got to have the firmware update. Otherwise, you can't install the drivers from iFi, and iFi won't work with your camera. And it you get in a vicious loop, and it's broken. It's utterly and totally broken.
Alex, you were going to say something a second ago. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just I think it's nice. I mean, it really is irrelevant whether it's Nikon or Canon and whoever's doing it. But it's sort of nice to see. It's like a fight back. It's you know, these companies, phone companies, whoever it is, have come along and they've basically nicked our business by producing low-end rubbish, but convenient low-end rubbish, and they've nicked our business. And what Nikon have done, they've already built a projector, they've already got this functionality, and they've said, you know what, a bit of revenge here, let's nick some of their rubbish. Let's jump on the back of their good. Because remembering this, if this works the way, you know, you and so eloquently described, there's no reason why you couldn't use this to stream video. So if you've got a film on your iPad, why can't you then use this to stream it and watch it on the wall or something?
I'll tell you why. Hollywood, that's why.
Someone to find a way.
I think the weak link as well is the projector, because the projector is probably, you know, very, very dark room, very, very close quarters. Yeah. You know, it's a tiny little projector inside a camera that's as thick as tea boxes and matches. So,
but it's a nice start. It's like the reversal of the process, because the only way this process was ever going to benefit us is if it worked two ways. If it all went from one manufacturer taking everything, we were all going to basically be sitting there, and we'd only be able to get excited if one person did something, or one person, one company. But now, if the traffic is going both ways, everybody might come up with something innovative, and we are the ones who will benefit.
I mean, Dave in the chat room is making a good point here. You know, oh, interesting. I love the idea that you can project from the computer to the mobile. It's not there yet, but it's the idea of the fact that you can do this and where it's then going to start going. At least the compact camera industry has started to fight back against the cell phone a bit, which is nice.
Agreed. I mean, it's funny you were talking. We're talking about technology integration, what needs to come into these cameras and these kind of things. But something you just mentioned there a second ago, Ewan, is firmware upgrades. And there's been, you know, this kind of creates a story on its own. There's been a buttload this week. Ricoh's had a firmware upgrade. Canon, I think, has had a firmware upgrade this week with their Coolpix AW. No, it's not their AW. It's the 5D Mark 12, another firmware upgrade. I mean, Olympus has had a firmware upgrade with the EPL3 and the EPM1. They've had firmware updates. I mean, are we getting to a time now where the compact cameras, specifically the compact cameras, want to become more like the phone cameras, where we're going to find limitations in the hardware, shall we say, of where we're going to have to upgrade instead of these firmware upgrades where we're wanting all this thing? Are we going to get to a point where I'm trying to say where the two merge?
I don't think you'd like to see, because Nikon's never going to make a cell phone element that goes in their cameras. They've got to make cameras that have an element which links and does all the things that the camera can do with the camera element, so that you're not going to make a call on your Nikon at any point soon. What you're going to do is upload to Flickr, etc., those kind of things, and interact with your friends on Facebook far more directly. Yeah. In order to do that, the processor's got to get bigger in the camera, the buffers have got to get bigger, the hard drive has got to get bigger in some respect that's inside it for the swap files and so on. And then also what's going to happen is that the camera has got to grow into the sense of providing a more over-the-air service for the end user. So when you get a firmware update, you're not taking your camera and plugging it back into your Mac to get to the internet. The camera has a Wi-Fi. I mean, you know, talking Wi-Fi components are significantly smaller and significantly doable inside the existing camera formats, even if they got just a shade bigger. And then the camera goes and gets its own firmware update. That's what's got to happen next. The camera's got to become a standalone consumer electronic item with interactivity within for the internet. Then it will survive, because it will always, always, always take the picture better than the cell phone, because it's not making a call, so it's got more room. It's got an external battery that it feeds into it rather than having to integrate a battery into it. And the cell phone still will always take the lower quality picture. The camera's got to do that, otherwise it'll be dead in the water.
Well, I think the next stage is for cameras is to have an OS on them.
Yes.
An updatable OS.
Well, I think a lot of them have got sort of Linux-esque or Solaris-based OS systems within them, haven't they?
Yeah. But, I mean, whereas we have a firmware update, we should just have a software-based, fewer software update. So, you know, firmware is the lowest level that you can update, and it's...
screaming for someone to do something with Android.
Yeah. I mean, but it's sitting on an EEPROM or something that can easily be corruptible, and it's such a palaver to update some firmware. Can you imagine how small an OS it would need to do Flickr integration and various stuff like that? Some other company comes along, some other Flickr-like, Facebook-like, Twitter-like company. They go to Nikon, whoever it is, and say, okay, we've got this. Stick the app in your next OS. Away we go.
Yeah, I think the next stage is that the camera's got to look at embracing the cell providers and say, look, we want an always-on data process, standard monthly rate, and then get a camera that integrates with Flickr and has massive data transfer off a 3G card.
Yeah.
Their point in the chat room, could you put a projector into a DSLR through the lens so you could use the lens for focus and image of size and all that kind of stuff? I don't see that, because that's the lens is taking wide and making it small. If you reverse it the other way, I think you're going to have problems with the fact that the sensor's in line for a start. But even if you had something that flicked in and out, you wouldn't get the light output, because it needs a fairly strong light behind it, doesn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what you could do. I know it sounds daft, but you could have, because you've got the mirror in there anyway, you could turn it round, and if you've got a proper optical viewfinder, you could have the output coming out the back of the camera, because that way is actually the right way round.
Mm. Mm.
You'd have to ignore the lens.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
No, it was a great discussion, because I think this is exactly where they need to go. I think that's, honestly, for people like myself, that gets me more into wanting to buy a DSLR, because I can do all that stuff with it. Right now, I don't want the hassle of sticking cards into my computer, having to, you know, worry about trying to upload from there, transfer this, do that. It is the wave of the future. And for your sake, Ewan, I hope Canon starts doing it.
All users.
For all users, yeah. But it just seems like we're not seeing it. We're not seeing it really from anybody, really. And we need to see more of it. And I think that's where it becomes more mainstream. I think both of you are exactly right. Let's top off the rest of the news this week. Something that, honestly, I'm not understanding a whole lot about, the law aspect, the view aspect of it. But the Olympic security has alerted to the photography guidance. Again, we've talked about this before. The Olympics coming up next year in London. You can't do this. You can't take that. They're only allowing certain camera sizes in. What's going on again this week, Ewan? I mean, are we going to a different level now? Are photographers being harassed even more? What's up with this?
Well, the story is basically about there is a guidance for security firms and the security agencies associated with camera use and so on. And one of the things that's quite worrying is the FBI wants to send 500 agents over because they don't believe that the UK police has got sufficient stop and search powers. And last time I looked, I'm not aware that the FBI has got any stop and search powers here in the UK. So none they can whatsoever. Take it and shove it up their backsides and piss off back home, as far as I'm concerned. We've got a decent force. They'll deal with it proportionally, respectfully and well, and I can't see that this is a huge issue. As long as people are made aware that people in public places with cameras have absolutely every right to take a picture of whatever they damn well choose, and for as long as they want as well, and the more that gets restricted, the less I feel like I live in a decent democracy, I'm afraid.
I'll agree with you to a point. I'll play both sides here, though. Don't you think this is all fine and dandy? I'm not with the FBI on this. I think it's crap that somebody coming in to another country and say, hey, this is how you do it, or we're going to do it, and tough. It's crap. You guys can handle it. What I'm saying, though, is don't you think all of this gets changed when somebody brings in a camera that happens to just become a gun and heaven forbid, take out somebody of...
I'm not aware of one on the market at the moment.
No, but we never are we?
We'd cover it if it became commercially available, definitely.
Yeah, you'd buy it.
I mean, there's a point from here in the chat room saying Met police have a history of harassment in places, making rules up as they go along. No, they don't. I think policemen have a habit of doing it, and the policemen that do it are a bunch of twats. I wouldn't suggest for one second that it constitutes policy of the Metropolitan Police. I think they have a few officers who, on occasion, have been overzealous, and they need to be tapped into line, but I don't think it's endemic.
Alex, what are your thoughts?
Oh, a part of me just trying not to be incredibly rude about the story. It's very hard not to have your back put up. I think we do a lot of things very well in this country, and to an extent, I don't feel that we need any advice from anyone on things like this. Any suggestions would be nicely welcome, but the way this story is phrased, it's as if we're a 51st state, and as far as I know, my tax dollars... Well, I don't pay them in dollars, do I? That's the point.
Yeah. You don't pay them in pounds either.
Thank you.
Well, as far as I'm concerned,
the thing is, I think a lot of this story, it started off because it was based on a lot of these companies have been, the companies that are going to be dealing with security for the Olympics, you know, they've all been picked and everybody knows what's going on. They are being given the British briefing, which is basically everybody has the right to do most things. There's obviously a level that no one can go past, and that's not to do with photography, that's to do with public order. If anyone's stupid enough to do a public order offence, whether they're carrying a camera or not, then let the whole law go down on them as hard as possible.
But is a cumber a mixture between a camera and a cucumber?
Is that what I said? Very sorry.
Don't you point that cumber at me.
Yes, exactly.
You can't take my seed. No, there's a point from Dave in the chat room. So instead of a machine gun in a violin case, it's going to be a camera case. And that's a really good point, because there's people walking around with frigging violin cases around London all the time, and they never get stopped. And you can fit a machine gun in there.
Well, maybe those walking around with those great big cello cases have got rocket launchers.
You can just see the Metropolitan Police pulling someone over and go, "Excuse me, sir, you've got a violin case and you look like James Cagney. Can I have a look inside?" What do you mean, no? I think you're on hostile music recon.
Well, you're a hostile
busker, aren't you?
You've got to take a look in the account of the size of the event, the who's going to be there, the countries that are going to be there. I'm not saying that it's any right for the United States to go there and say, this is how you do your business. That's not what I'm saying, though, is don't you think a lot of things has changed for everybody, from the States, from 9/11 to 7/7 in the UK? Everybody, it's a different way of looking now. Everything is different now.
Yes, it is. Everything is completely different. But we have a police force. We have all these things that are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, stopping plots, stopping things, starting and stopping in the first place. This is just another day in this country. It's not like we live in some Caribbean island or some beautiful paradise. Things are going on in this country all the time. And I really do believe that if anybody is on top of it, we are as on top of it as anyone else, and nobody else would be any better.
We've been dealing with terrorism since the 70s.
Exactly. The early 70s, yeah, I mean, we practically invented it.
Yeah, I mean, people, the Irish have been trying to bomb us from the 70s through to the year 2000, the Southern Irish and the and Sinn Féin and those kind of things. And we've always, which is a political wing, I know, but we've been dealing with terrorism for a very long time, and America hasn't, and that's the trouble. And after 9/11, the one thing that America shouldn't have done was cancel the Ryder Cup. They should have come over. They should have played it, because terrorism is about disrupting your way of life. It's not about actually carrying out the threat much at all. It's about terror, not about action.
Mm. I'd agree with that, because that's something we're very good about. I mean, I know this is turning political, but that's something we're very good about. We're getting reactive instead of proactive.
Sorry, I've read from a comment
in the planet now, so let's get on.
I've just read a comment in the chat room from Mick, but I can't repeat it. But it's true.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Oh God, it's great to be a Yank.
It's all right, mate. we try. You're an honorary Brit. There we go.
Oh,
you've got to perfect a British accent before you come over.
Bless you.
Can I have a pint of beer, please?
Nah, I won't say that, eh?
No, you could do that. Yeah, you could do John Paul and George and Ringo.
I could do a bit of that. Yeah, I could do a bit of Liverpoolian.
Yeah, go to Manchester.
That's not bad.
Go to Manchester and practice it.
That would be dear.
Well, I might be able to get away with that. Shall we get into the questions, guys?
Let's
do it. First question comes from Michael. Hey, fellas. On a visit to the to a wetlands wildlife park, I got some excellent pics of flora and fauna.
Fauna, yeah.
Yeah, okay. However, what are those, by the way? Flora and fauna. Anyways,
flora is plants. Fauna is birds and rabbits and ducks and
fauna. Yeah, yeah. Okay, gotcha. Wildlife.
Mm. There you go.
It'd be easier just to say that.
Okay.
So for me, I happen to think. Anyways, however, it was a great day, and all the pictures were a beautiful colored wildfowl were spoiled by
you've skipped over the word that you don't know there very well, mate.
Yeah.
It was a somberly gray day.
A somberly, yeah. No, seriously, I didn't see it. Oh, bloody hell. Anyways, I guess the pictures were crap is what he's trying to say here. I guess you could argue it doesn't detract from the plumage, etc. It was a bit boring. Do you have any suggestions or ways of making the water backdrop a little more interesting, either with a filter or in processing an iPhoto or something similar? There, I finally got through it.
Yeah, the plumage was great.
Plumage usually is grey, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's the picture that he sent as well. He sent us a picture. If you've got a question that relates to a picture, for God's sake, send the picture. Well done, Michael. It's a good picture. I like that. It's fine.
I like the image.
Nothing a bit of sharpening wouldn't help.
Yeah, I think the only thing that is missing in the eye is it could do with a bit of a possibly a daylight blue filter on top, because I think that is as it was in the time, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think your brain... I think the issue is the sort of vibrance has gone a bit, and I think you envisage the picture having a slightly more blue tint to be more sunlight based. I think that might be part of the issue.
Yeah, I think the thing you've got to bear in mind is that water is basically a reflection, nothing more. Exactly. So if the sky is grey, the water's grey. And that's, to a certain degree, is all there is to it. There is not a lot you can actually do once you've got a grey sky, because the water will pick up whatever it is. If the sky went red, the water would be red. The only thing I can say is I've just quickly shoved that through Photoshop, and if you look very carefully on the video, if you're watching, the actual change is going to be very, very subtle here. But if you notice, just with the levels change there, you've got a little bit more blue and a lot more saturation comes back just with a simple levels change. It really is. Let me do a slightly different...
plumage.
No, transfer. There we go. You can just see that's the original image there. It's ever so slightly yellowed, which I would say is probably your camera shot with a little bit warm on the Kelvin, because it thinks it's very cold and grey outside. And just with a simple change, it just gives it that little bit of blueness back, and it does give a tiny hint to the water. The other thing you can do, of course, is shoot in raw, because if you go in raw, you can start affecting the saturation fairly well individually. And you could also then go into layers if you want to start going a bit more photorealistic. And you could add a tint across the water afterwards after you've cut the bird out.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you were really going to town, that's what I'd do. I'd take the levels off the white of the bird. I would then probably up the vibrance because it's a nice new control in CS5 vibrance. And then I would probably desaturate the water rather than make it blue and the whole thing would pop. But as for the image, you know, I can't really see anything wrong with it. The quickest way to do it would be to take a color reading, a white balance reading off the white of the duck and let it work it out for itself.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with that.
But to a certain degree, the moral of the story is if you're shooting things on water on a grey day, it's going to be grey.
I think that stands up on its own. Well done.
I'm going to go sulk in a corner after this show.
Why?
You know, make sure your plumbing is fine when you go.
I'm going to make sure I read the questions from now on before the show. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do it on the fly because it doesn't work for me. I've inherited your dyslexia, Ewan. Thank you.
Stop picking on the poor Yanks, is the chat room.
Yeah. Thank you, chat room. I love you. I hate these two. Next question.
I'm going to start my
David's just put a comment when I said about if you've got a picture, then put a picture in the thing. He says, but when you write in, make sure you know Carl's going to read it so you can add some challenging words.
Oh, thank you so much. Next question comes from our own Carl. I thought I'd slip this in. He's so nice with the wording. Thank you, Carl.
And Carl does all the bookings of all the guests for all the shows, yes, and he's a Trojan, so he gets a shout for that.
Yeah. And he can drink me under the table. He proved that the other day as well.
Yeah, he can't drink me, though.
Yeah, well.
And he went around London and didn't get stopped. And he's the one person that you would expect to stop with a camera.
Yeah, the police are too scared of him.
By the way, sorry, you can follow him on Twitter at Claw, C-L-A-W-0101 on Twitter, if you guys like. I'm going to get into the question now. Is it okay?
Sorry, mate, yeah.
Okay, great. Love the informative nature of the show. Of course he's going to say that, but I'm glad he does. Thoroughly enjoying talking about or taking pictures with my Nikon D5100. I am sometimes, however, a little overwhelmed with the amount of shots I've taken in a single day. I was wondering if the panel have a specific workflow method for dealing and managing their shots when they get back to their computers, and if they have any tips they could share.
Yes.
That's my tip.
Yeah, I just take every fourth one and throw it away. No, not really. Well, I'll just give you a quick run through what I do. I do a similar thing. Right, the first thing is I shoot in RAW and JPEG as standard because I'm too lazy to make any decisions. So that way I don't have any decisions to make.
And film.
I don't tend to shoot in RAW, JPEG, and film at the same time because that really would be a clever camera.
That would be very cool.
It would be very cool and very heavy. So what I do is I dump the whole lot into a folder on my desktop. I then separate them into RAW and JPEG, two different folders, easily done. I then tend to open up, I use Bridge in Photoshop Bridge or Adobe Bridge, and then do a thing called stacking. Because most pictures would be of a similar scene if you're doing that. You'd tend to take four angles of the same thing and move on to the next one. So when you stack things, what you do, you put them in like little subfolders. Oh, that's a great noise. Then what I do then is I have a look through each one of those subfolders, and invariably half of them are useless. Because you've got only the four that you're looking at of the same image, it's very easy to compare and contrast and just throw away the ones you don't want to use. And I tend to do that at the beginning because otherwise I go backwards and forwards. Then I end up with, say, two of the same thing. If they're very close, I will go through processing both of them. I'll only save the one I want to keep. When you save it, especially if you're working in RAW, it keeps a data file and then everything's fine. So it wheedles its way down to one or two of each shot, and then I convert them normally into TIFF because that's what I store things in. And that's it. You've gone down from 500 images to 50 good images, and everyone thinks you're a great photographer.
Russ in the chat room says, do what everyone else does. I shove them into Aperture and never look at them again.
Yeah, that, the trouble is if you want to store 500 pictures, that's the reason I do it in that order, because I actually get rid of all the rubbish first.
Well, my workflow is completely different. I don't know anyone else that does this, and I don't know why not, because it seems really patently obvious. Whether you're shooting JPEG or RAW, it doesn't matter because Preview on the Mac opens both formats. So what I do is select all the images on the cards after I've dragged them onto the hard disk, right-click on, and whatever it wants to open them with, I tell it it's got to open it with Preview. When it opens it with Preview, I can view it dead easily, almost like it's as fast as a thumbnail. And then when I want to edit a shot, all I've got to do is go to the right column where all of the Preview images are, pick that image up in Preview, drag it down to the Photoshop icon, and it will open the full image from the original in Photoshop at the full res. And yeah, it doesn't whether it's RAW or JPEG. So you get through a vast amount of photos very quickly. I mean, that's the classic flow for me when I come back from rugby. I've got 200 to 300 shots of the match. I just open them all in Preview, and then whichever one I want, I drag it down. And then if it needs to, it opens up the RAW processor for Photoshop to go at if I shot in RAW.
I love hearing you guys agree.
Just one additional to the reason I do that is just because of it. It's something that's developed itself over time. I leave the folder that's finished on my desktop until I know a Time Machine backup has been finished. Then once I know that, so maybe I leave it there for a day. I'm always mark it red because it's not been completely. I know it's not been backed up. Once I know a backup's done, I take the flag red flag off and then I drop it in the work folder. Then the next time a backup is done, I've now got two Time Machine backups of the same finished file. And that way I don't have to remember to do a double backup because I've got a sync program that syncs my work folder. So I have definitely got two separate backups on two separate hard drives and I don't have to think about it. It's just a process that I fell into and I know my work is backed up in two different places. So that's another reason I do that way. Mm.
Hopefully that answers Carl's question. If not, he can always DM us.
Or we could go down the pub and talk about it.
That's true. You guys got a question, as you can see, we'll get to them. We'll try to each and every week on BagelTechPhoto, BagelTechPhoto@gmail.com. Get your questions in and we will get them on the podcast each and every week for you. Of course, all of this is not possible without those fine folks over at UK2.net, BagelTechNews.com. Go there. Go to the left side of the page. You'll go down to where it says sponsors and friends. You're going to see UK2.net. Click there. Please click there. It takes you over to UK2.net. That way they know we sent you and they can keep bringing you or help bringing you, should I say, this wonderful podcast as well as all the Bagel Tech shows each and every week. Ewan is always the one that's up to speed on what UK2 is doing. So what are they doing this week?
Same stuff, really. I mean, if you go to the website that we've got, bageltechnews.com, and click through, as Carl says, then when you get to check out, use the offer code BAGELTECH, you get 15% off. And if you're transferring a domain in, use the offer code BAGELDNS, and you'll get the DS management charge will get removed. That'd be Don.
You should just let him in. Just let him in.
Hello.
Hello, mate. You're on the photo show.
Hello, Don. Welcome to Bagel Tech Photo. Do you have a question?
Welcome to Bagel Tech Photo, mate.
It is fine, too.
No, I know, mate. We just overrun a bit. So I keep saying we've got to move this back, but they won't listen to me.
I know nothing about photos.
1:30.
Nor do we. You're in great company.
But Don knows about UK2.net.
Yeah, he loves them, too.
Oh, we're on that part, are we?
Yeah, we are.
Love them.
Love them to bits.
You can't ask for a better recommendation than that. Please, anybody, please support UK2.net. Don does.
I do.
God bless him.
My server, my livelihood is based on UK2.net. No, my dedicated server is run by them, and it goes like something off a shovel. It's very, very, very quick.
Excellent.
Well, at least we can put Don's name on the show notes now, so we'll get some extra.
Yeah. We got Don on photo. Don.
Appreciate it.
I'll just sit here quietly while you finish up then.
Thank you for coming on the show, Don. You're the fastest guest in history. UK2.net, thank you so much for supporting this. And we're sorry each and every week to UK2.net. Thank you so much. Oh, that's going to wrap up this week's show, isn't it? I guess let's talk about a Flickr page real quick. Of course, we do have our Bagel Tech Photo Flickr group. It's at flickr.com/groups/BagelTechPhoto, correct, Ewan?
It is. That's the one.
Okay. Thank God. I still remember that. And you can get over there, get signed up. We got a lot of members over there. Share your photos. And, you know, that way we can also talk about that each and every week, too. Are we doing an assignment this month? Because I've been
it's still the same one up until Christmas.
So it's what is it again?
Balls.
Balls. I'll think of something. I haven't had time. Have you done yours?
No, I'm doing it now.
Alex, you done yours?
Yes.
Oh, so somebody's got his balls together.
Exactly. Come on, dude, finish the show already.
I can't. I'm trying to milk Don for all he's worth.
Nah, finish the show, dude.
You can get me at Alex G. Fox on Twitter. Thank you.
Ooh. Ewan?
Yeah, you can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter and I'm at ewanrankin.co.uk for commercial photography work. Thank you.
If anybody's bothered, you can find me on Twitter at Kyle Swagger at finding the nearest Webster's Dictionary. We'll see you next week for another fun-filled episode of Bagel Tech Photo. We're running into Mac. Oh, my God.
We're putting the Mac. We're going to put the photo show back half an hour. For
everyone. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
We got to go. Bye-bye.
God, we're slick.
I've missed this, you know. I really missed this for the past 3 years.
I hope nobody thinks we know what's going on.
Oh, man.
Hello, Paul.
How's it going?
Oh, it's all right, mate. We've had a right old game here this afternoon. We're not laughing at you, but we're just, oh, man.